This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It got cold today. So winter is finally here. We're back in normal temperatures. It's been warm. Oh, man. We got to the middle of January, and I was thinking, wow, this is not too bad. We were having days in the 50s and the 60s, but, you know, I think that old jet stream changed on us, and here we are. So, this is our normal cold. I realize for some of you, this is not very cold, but it's in the teens, and it's supposed to be getting down to about 12 tonight, with a wind chill down around zero. I realize that up north it gets much colder than this, but for us, this is cold. So anyways, have my little gloves on, driving home, finishing up a little late tonight. I thought I was going good. And then I was building some data and it kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I had done a test run of it originally, and it wasn't too bad. You know, it was about 3.7 million records, and I thought, oh, okay, well, that's workable, that's doable. And then I changed a few things and kind of expanded the scope of the project, and I was about halfway done, and I was up to like 8 million records. So I talked to the bus man, and we're going to kind of back up and punt. We're going to go at it slightly different way. We'll get that all worked out. I am off tomorrow. Going to see the dentist tomorrow. Haven't been to see the dentist in a while. It's a long story that I've told pieces of over the years as I've done this podcast. But I've just felt like a little nudge, like, okay, you need to get that done. And so, okay, so going tomorrow. Hopefully they won't find anything too major. I don't feel like I've got anything too major going on, and I have been very faithful. I am very faithful about brushing my teeth every night and flossing and doing my little interdental toothbrush thingy, and so we'll see. And Listerine. It always surprises me that there are actually people in the world who drink Listerine, because it's like 25% alcohol. And it's cheap. And so they don't care. They just need their alcohol. And so they drink Listerine. I cannot. Wow. Goodness. Anyways. Because I slosh it around in my mouth for 30 seconds, of course. But drink it. Wow. Drink it. So it's been a good week. I've got a new little project that sort of fell out of the sky, and it's one of those, we need this, excuse me, I'm yawning, we need this as soon as possible. So this week, last week we had a meeting, that all seemed to go fine. This week we're making the changes for that meeting, then also developing a project plan to figure out how we're going to do this and what's the fastest way we can get this up, and did the presentations on that on Wednesday and Thursday, and then kept working, and all of it was very well received. And so everybody on the client side is very encouraged, which is always good when the customers are happy. So that seems like that's going to be fine. You know, I got a little slowed down today, and it's one of these things. It was like, well, probably 2 to 3 weeks we can have phase one done. And I did give myself a little padding. But when I back up and take the second run at this, it really needs to work on the second run, because I cannot afford to lose a week on this. And I was supposed to, I tentatively hoped to get what I was doing today done in one day, and it's probably going to stretch to 2 days by the time we're all said and done. That's not too bad, because it's the most complicated data pull that I'm doing and setting up. So even if it stretches to 2 or 3 days or 4 days, it's going to be fine. Because the rest of it's pretty straightforward. Anyways, so had some nice meetings with friends this week. We're still not quite back into the swing with everybody. But had some nice meetings and had some nice get-togethers. Actually got a chance to talked to my buddy, my best buddy in the world over the weekend, and that was fun. We'd both been going just different directions, and we don't get together on any kind of a scheduled basis, and so his granddaughter was having a birthday party, and so I specifically went to that, hoping that there wouldn't be any other adults, you know, our age except us, and there wasn't, and so I actually had a chance to chat with him a little bit, and man, it was good to just talk to my buddy again. I just miss talking with him. We've just been going different directions, but we got that taken care of. And anyway, so in the process of talking to my friends this week, the topic for discussion, I think I mentioned it last week, one of the topics for discussion was the botany of desire. And I sort of took away an oblique lesson from the botany of desire, although it did have some just interesting stuff in it. And the idea behind the botany of desire is examining a few examples of plants that have thrived in their partnerships with humans. That humans have found these plants, used these plants, taken them around the world, and they have thrived because they filled some kind of niche for humans. Be it the desire for sweetness that we're hardwired for, be it the desire for to see beauty, be it the desire for intoxication, be it the desire for sustenance. And so, you know, okay, well, that's a pretty interesting topic to begin with. But then there were some things just as they discussed these four plants that really were pretty interesting. And I'll go through those quickly, and then I'll talk about the oblique lesson that I took away from it. The first one they talked about was apples. And they confirmed again that, yes, in fact, we are wired for sweetness. That very early, we are attracted to things that are sweet. And the author said that if you just go out in nature by itself, sweet is rare. And the thing about sweet is that it indicates to us that it's a high caloric food. And so if you're kind of trying to make your way in the world and you're hunting and exploring, those kind of things, and you find something that's sweet, that's like bonanza, eureka, because you know that that sweetness translates to something that can keep you going in a small, compact unit. So it is highly prized. Honey, for instance, honey has been highly prized since man found honey, because it's sweet, it's powerful, packs a lot of punch, gets you to the next destination. Well, the thing about it is that in our world, sweetness is no longer rare. It is ubiquitous, and it's cheap. So that's a little problem, but that's just a sidebar. One of the things that was interesting about the apple that I did not know is that if you plant apple seeds, you don't necessarily get apples of the same type as that apple. You plant apple seeds, you get a genetic diversity out of those apple seeds. And the only way to produce the same type of apple as you have on a tree is to actually graft the branches. And so people plant apple seeds. In the early days, they would plant apple seeds and plant apple seeds and plant apple seeds, and then they'd find that one that was pretty sweet, and then they'd just start grafting that. Well, one of the interesting little sidebars in the program was how the Red Delicious got its name. And unfortunately, I got away late, so I can't see my notes, but the gist of the story was there's this little farmer. And he had planted a bunch of apple seeds and trees and stuff. Well, he had one tree that put out this red, sweet apple. And he told his wife, you know, this is it. This is it. Taste this. This is great. Because it's rare. So he sends it into this big contest that was being held every year by this mogul who had an apple plant or something, and that he was some kind of a big vegetable fruit guy, and he had this contest where people would submit apples, and he was looking for this one apple because he had this piece of paper in his pocket that he had already put the title for this apple, and he never found the apple that deserved the name that was in his pocket. And so one year, this farmer sends this apple in, and sure enough, he says, that's the delicious. And so he calls it the delicious, and he's going to get in touch with the farmer, except he's lost the farmer's entry card. And so they don't know who sent them this apple. So they wait till the next year, hoping the farmer will send it in, and in fact he does. They get in touch with him. They pay him for the rights to the apple. The farmer retires happy. They go on and Red Delicious is barred. So that's pretty interesting. One of the upshots of all that, though, is that when you understand that when you plant seeds from an apple, you get all kinds of apples, the story of Johnny Appleseed actually takes on a different meaning. Because our idea of Johnny Appleseed is that he went around and spread apples because they were so good to eat, and everybody fell in love with the apple. And it's not quite, not quite. Because when you plant apple seeds, you get trees with all kinds of different varieties, and many of them, you can't eat them. They're so bad. Apparently, what Johnny Appleseed was doing is he would go into an area that he felt was going to be populated. He would go in several years ahead of time, and he would clear and plant orchards. And then he would come back after everyone started settling, and he'd actually sell people saplings. Except these saplings did not produce apples that were sweet. Because at that time, people did not prize apple trees for apples that were sweet. People prized apple trees because they could take the apples and make hard cider. They could make alcohol from them. So the story of Johnny Appleseed is a little bit different. It's not that this guy was going around and planting apple trees so everyone could enjoy the benefits of apples, the health benefits, and the sweetness of them. He was going around and planting apple seeds because he knew people would want those saplings so they could produce apples and make their own liquor. That's kind of interesting. Anyways, the second plant they talked about was the tulip. And, of course, in the tulip, there is the desire for beauty. And the author was expressing his amazement, who wrote the book that then turned into this series, over the fact that bees and us have the same appreciation, have the same concept of what is a beautiful flower. And it was fun because he called flowers exquisitely useless, or somebody called them exquisitely useless. And yet we love flowers. And they went through the whole thing with the tulip panic, bulb panic in Holland in the 1700s that destroyed the Holland economy. And I won't go over that. But they also talked about a clearinghouse for flowers, and I think it was in Amsterdam. This warehouse is huge. It is huge. I think it's like 200 football fields or something. It's amazing how big this is. Carts going back and forth all the time with flowers, because as soon as you cut these flowers, they start to die and you lose money. So you've got to get them bought quick and you got to ship them out the door. And this warehouse, they've got this room where they're doing a Dutch auction. And this Dutch auction is run so that they start out with a high price that no one is willing to pay. And then the price drops until someone says, yeah, I'll buy that lot. Now, what was interesting about this is the way people bid. And that is that they have these things that sort of look like clocks that have red dots all the way around them, or white dots. And the dots sort of start out as red, and they're moving these lots of flowers, just boom, boom, boom. I mean, they're going fast. And so the amount of time between the time it starts out at the starting price and the time the auction is over is fast. We're talking 5 seconds, 7 seconds from what I could see. And so basically, it's starting out at its top price, and you see the dots running on this clock, where they're going in a circle, where the price is dropping. And what you have to do as a bidder is you have to watch the dots and then hit the button at the point that you want to bid, hoping that you're going to get it, because other people are bidding and they may be willing to pay a little more, and it's fast. And they said, yeah, sometimes you lose it and sometimes you pay more than you want, but this is the way they do it because they have to move so much out. I think it was 19 million flowers a day are sold through this warehouse, 21 million flowers and houseplants. It's just an incredible amount is going through this thing. So that was pretty interesting. The next one they talked about was marijuana. Of course, the desire for intoxication and how that people all over the world, you know, have taken marijuana all over the world. And of course, they talked about the whole legalization thing. The final one they talked about was potatoes and how that originally in the Andes, where the potato came from, there's tremendous amount of diversity. That the Incas would have little plots that they had built, terraced farming all the way up the sides of mountains and down the other side. And over time they knew, okay, well, this one's a little on the sun side, so we're going to plant this crop here. And they would plant little patches of all these different potatoes, diversity, huge amount of diversity, so that if one crop didn't do so well, another crop wouldn't, they'd have food. Well, the Westerners come in, they see it, they bring the crop back to America, and they decide, for the most part, they only like one type of potato. And so this, you know, just certain types of potatoes spread. And in Ireland almost, what was it called, the lumpy something? Anyways, they exclusively planted this one potato up in Ireland. It was a boon, originally, to Ireland, because now all of a sudden they had something that could, on a sustainable basis, support their population. And so their population was able to have a good, sustainable food product that if you had potatoes and you had a cow where you could get milk, you could pretty much give yourself all the nutrients you needed. Until the potato blight shows up. And when the potato blight shows up, which I think was a fungus, it spread across Ireland within a matter of weeks, and when it would hit a field, within days, the potatoes would all be black in this field. So, of course, there's this huge famine because they only planted one potato. The other thing that was interesting about the potatoes that was in a little sidebar that I was watching on the web was that when the potato first came to Europe, no one was too hip on planting potatoes because they were part of a group called nightshade, I think, plants, that most of them were poisonous. And so everyone was a little, they were like, we don't know about this. The other thing is, because the potato was in the ground and it came out dirty, and people were looking at it going, we're going to eat this? And it was really interesting because I think it was the King of France came up with a fairly novel way to convince people that they should grow potatoes, because he was really hip on it. Because potatoes would grow in pretty much any kind of soil. They were fairly hardy. And he saw this as a way to keep his people fed. And fed people are happy people who don't revolt. Okay, so he's going to try to figure out, how do I get people to actually covet these potatoes? Using a little reverse psychology. He sets aside some of his finest land for growing things. And he plants potatoes. And then he sets up his guards around this field as if to say, you are not allowed in these fields because what I'm growing here is so precious that you are not allowed to have it. Except he pulls his guards away from the field at midnight. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And of course, when he pulls, the peasants all kind of figure out after a while that he's pulling the guards away from these fields at midnight. And they think, here's our chance. And so they all run into the fields and they steal his potatoes and smuggle them away and think, ha, we put one over on the king. And then they discover, you know, these potatoes are pretty good, and they start planting their own. And that's how the potato got introduced. Okay, that's a very smart ruler. Anyways, what I came away with on this show, one of the things that kept coming back to over and over in this show was the idea of diversity. That the apple seeds, when you plant it, they put out this diverse amount of apples. Now, maybe they're not the apples we want, but that's how the apple protects itself, is it has this tremendous diversity. Same thing with the potato. The potato, there's all these diverse species of potatoes. I'm backing in my garage. So I will talk louder. And that is the way the potato protects itself. And really, it's the way we protect ourselves when we're growing potatoes. We need to grow a variety of potatoes in a very distributed fashion. And that way, if there is a blight that comes in, it only hits one type of potato. And it doesn't just wipe everything out and cause the type of famine. They kept coming back to, over and over, the idea of monocultures. And how the human beings, we really love our monocultures. We like to get everything organized. Crunched all down. We're going to do one thing. And I think that can apply in our lives as well when it comes to, for instance, our relationship with God. One of the coolest things that any of the guys I get together with to talk on a regular basis, one of the coolest things that any of the guys ever said to me was, I'm not going to simply take what I hear from you and then just say, well, Phil said it, so that's it. And he said, just walk away. He said, I'm going to take what you say, and I'm going to think about it, and I'm going to listen, and I'm going to adapt it to myself. I said, absolutely. That's it. Because that's a form of diversity. You know, the Holy Spirit works with us, and each of our experiences in Christ, they're all different because we're all individuals. And that's just fine. I have an acquaintance that is living a life that some people within the Christian walk would be very uncomfortable with. They would question him about his activities. They would question how he could call himself a Christian, yada, 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 yada. And in my relating to him, I relate to him in love, understanding that he loves Jesus. He's on a certain track. Things will work out. I've let him know, I don't think this is going to create an environment of success for you. And there's a part of him that already knows that. But he isn't ready to make his decisions yet. Well, you know, there's some people that say, well, you know, we need to lower the boom on this guy. Get him out of it. And I look at that almost as kind of a form of diversity. It's his life. He gets to choose. He will bear whatever consequences there are from the choices he's making, just like I will bear whatever consequences I will bear from the choices that I make. But just because he's different from the choices I make doesn't mean that I'm then going to shun him and shut him out and say, well, you're not a part of my monoculture. You're not a part of my little group over here. I would rather leave his life up to him and Jesus understanding that I am in his life and he knows that I love him and that I can talk very plainly and bluntly to him about certain things, and he'll take it from me and he'll listen because he knows that I love him, and he also knows that I'm not going to try to take away his choices and his decisions. On the flip side, I was having another conversation with another acquaintance this week. And it's kind of a complicated story, but basically this person's parents were upset because one of their employees had gone over someplace and expressed an interest in Christianity, and this other place had baptized them immediately and accepted their interest in Christianity as an indication they wanted to become a Christian. And my acquaintance's parents were upset about that, that they baptized him so quickly because he didn't have any training. He maybe really didn't understand what he was doing. And they had all these objections. And I just looked at my acquaintance and I said, you know, the early church, that was it. You know, you said you wanted to be a Christian. Boom, you got baptized right then. But because this acquaintance parents, because this guy didn't follow their pattern, you know, they were nervous. They were upset. They were offended. It's like we talked about several weeks ago. They were offended. As opposed to just saying, oh, hey, you went over and you were interested and they baptized. That's great. That is absolutely great. Let's take some time with you and let's start going out on a weekly basis and let's talk about the things of God and start discipling him. You know, and acting like he made a decision, because if you start discipling him and acting like he made, then he'll just wander into Christ and it'll be fine. I just don't know what's gained by saying, well, you didn't do it our way and you didn't ascribe to our monoculture. We should just give Jesus the opportunity to work in people's lives. And I know a lot of people are thinking, oh, well, what's going to happen with heresy in the church? But I am confident that the Holy Spirit can take care of a lot of that stuff. And that he will have his people that will come into contact with other people and will work it out. I told a friend again this week, my goal in life is to affect 12 people profoundly. To talk to them, to share with them all the things I think I know about life and give them the opportunity to react to them and to integrate them or not integrate them into their life, but to profoundly affect 12 people. And honestly, if all of us in life would make that our goal, to profoundly affect 12 people, I think we'd have a pretty amazing world. Certainly not everybody would see it that the same way. There would be a lot of diversity but you know, I think it would be a really interesting experiment to try that I don't think we're ever going to try, but that's okay. That's what I'm going to try. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.